is amateur hour.
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
AHPKC is brought to you by ArrowheadPride.com. This is a show about football and friendship and fun. We're truthful, but not always accurate. We're red and yellow and ridiculous. We're basically Andy Reid's wardrobe, but a podcast. Enough of the formalities. Can we talk Chiefs now? Let's go. Welcome into Amateur Hour, folks. You've got Ryan Scott Hall and the always lovely His Dirkus.
What's up?
Hey, Dirk.
What's up?
Dude, stupid Chiefs.
Well,
so
I've already forgotten.
So, it's been a few days because the Chiefs played on Thursday, and it is Monday. It's Tuesday.
What day is it?
That's kind of where I was at. All right, so the Chiefs were 5-0, and then they lost two games in like 4 days' time.
We were waiting for it.
And after losing to the Raiders in Oakland, that snapped a five-game winning streak against the Raiders, a nine-game winning streak on the road, and a 12-game winning streak against the AFC West.
Fuck. Could have tied the record.
So
tied the all-time record with a win there.
You know, those are some disheartening statistics.
Hey, we've broken a few streaks this year too.
Yeah, yeah. I had a very unique game watching experience personally, as some of you may or may not have witnessed. So you told me that when I started the game. That was like right when the game had actually ended in real time.
Yes.
So I started like right at 11 o'clock. I had to go to work. And people at work were like streaming the game in the office.
So we've each had a game experience like that this year.
And I was like constantly just like having to avoid it. And people would be like, do you want to know?
Did you go with the run the jewels method? The put the earbuds in and turn it up full volume?
I couldn't because I was at work. But we don't have any TVs because it's a super fancy pants restaurant. So that was good. But like people kept like bordering on saying things. And I'm like, nope, fingers in the ears. So I got home and I didn't really know anything at all. So that was great. And I felt like I was tweeting about, like, every other play. Like, I mean, I live tweeted the game. And, man, I had so much fun. I really did. I had a great time.
The game was terrific.
I thought it was,
take the result out. I mean, and the Chiefs have won their fair share of games like that.
Yeah.
So I think we can relax on losing one of them. But the game was tremendous. We had Chiefs-Raiders. We had four different ending plays, which I don't think I've ever seen before.
Right.
We had a fight.
Yeah. Actually, two fights if you count the one on the sidelines that Tracy Wolfson reported.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Donald Penn and Michael Crabtree getting into it.
Yep. And then we had Alan Bailey kicking a Raiders defender with both legs.
Seeing that after the fact, I was just like, this is joyful. That's so great. I mean, I've had a lot of people ask me since then, you know, what did you think? Like, how mad are you? Blah, blah, blah. And really, I just had fun. Like, it sucks that we lost, but to be honest, like,
It was so entertaining, and it was just like, I tweeted before the game that I could really go for like a boring, methodical Andy Reid Chiefs win.
It was not that.
Which that was not.
It had all the makings of that, what, 2.5 quarters through. The Chiefs got the 10-point lead and was just like, all right, here it comes. Or I guess a 9-point lead. Let me reiterate.
But I don't know. Like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed really the vast majority of the game, except for just, you know, the very, very end. I think that, like, because of how quickly things have changed, we should probably just kind of talk about, like, where we're at with the team. You know, we've got 9 games left over the span of about 11 weeks or so. So let's try to start there. Where you at? Where's your head at?
My stance with where the Chiefs are at, obviously it sucks. We could have had a stranglehold on the entire AFC if we beat Pittsburgh, pretty much. I tweeted out before that game, looking at a 3.5 game lead over the Patriots, looking at a 2.5 game over the, or no, 3.5 over the Steelers, 2.5 over the Patriots, and 3 games over the Raiders, just for the win that game. Obviously it didn't happen, so now the Steelers have crept back in, we lost again, so the AFC looks like it's 3 contending teams. It's looking like Patriots, Steelers, and Chiefs. But with the Chiefs, I feel like we're all in a state of mind where we've been successful enough that nothing that we do in the regular season matters that much.
Yeah.
Like, we had as good as a Chiefs regular season as we have in my lifetime last year, and it amounted to a home playoff loss once again. And we don't look at that season all that fondly. I mean, there's still great memories from it, but we remember the playoff loss to Pittsburgh more than anything. So nothing this team does in the regular season is really going to stay with us that much. It's about what we do in January. And getting the first seed would definitely help that cause. But also, I think we'd all remain a little bit skeptical with the team even if we were the runaway first seed in the NFC, right? I mean, we're not all in on the Super Bowl, I don't think. We're all just kind of like, okay, here comes some home playoff games against the perennial contenders. Let's see if the same thing happens, whatever. So when you look at it like that, we're still on course to make the playoffs, and we're still right there with the top teams, so we're still right there to accomplish everything in January, and maybe we made it a little bit tougher on ourselves, but everything is still there to accomplish.
So, A couple reactions from that, if I can, before I kind of tell you exactly where I'm at.
Don't start with me today, Ryan.
Firstly, like, the biggest thing for me that is difficult is, like, at least for the purposes of this program, even if the next 9 football games don't matter as much as the penultimate playoff game that they will hopefully eventually end up having. Presumably, they will end up having.
It would take quite a meltdown to lose the AFC West at this point, I would say.
I, number one, am not emotionally or physically prepared to just, like, fast forward through the next 9 games.
No.
And
but that's maybe a peek into my mind why I'm... I feel like I'm getting over losses very quickly. That will change if we lose on Monday night. But losses are bouncing off me. I feel like we've been playing with house money the whole time. I mean, obviously, I thought the Chiefs were on a trajectory for 2019, so it's kind of like a house money season for me. But I'm just... all eyes are on January. Like, all this is just, like, entertainment for now.
Yeah. It's just hard for me to look at it like that because I am so emotionally invested in the team that, like... the week-to-week swings, sometimes it can feel like, you know, like complete rebirth, or it can feel like, you know, Armageddon. And so, like, the other thing, so you mentioned that, like, you know, it feels like entering the playoffs, we're probably going to have, like, the same old Chiefs sort of feeling at that point. Like, well, I guess we'll have to see. We're going to be playing against Tom Brady or Ben Roethlisberger and you know, like, let's hope they can get it done, essentially. I don't know if there are answers to this, and I certainly don't think that we're, like, prepared to answer it today, and it's probably not the right time to do it anyway, but the thing that the team has to figure out over the next 9 games, and let's call it maybe, like, 12 weeks if they end up getting a bye and whatnot, is, like, how can the result this season become different? If we don't feel like the situation is different, maybe, obviously, the team is, and the way that they're playing so far this season has been.
Yep.
But, you know, what can they do? What ways can they prepare over the next 9 games to get there? And that's something that, I mean, we don't have to figure out. It's amateur hour. But
got 9 weeks to figure it out.
But that's, I mean, that I think that that's really where Andy and the coaching staff, you would assume that that's, I mean, given the fact that they, even though they did, like, draft Mahomes and they cut Macklin and you see these things that point away from this season, they were pretty steadfast in, like, we can win a Super Bowl and our goal is to win the Super Bowl. And while we all felt like that was, you know, coach speak.
Gobbledygook.
Yeah. But you still have to look at it and say, like, if they're sitting there at the beginning of the season and saying, like, these are the things that we know that we have to do better in order to be more competitive against those teams in the playoffs, you know that, like, some of the boxes that they're trying to check, it seems like, at least on offense, they've already done it. We have to throw downfield more often and more effectively. I don't really know what, like, the season-long goals for the defense were. Maybe, like, trying to establish who the number 2 corner really is and whatnot.
Stay,
like,
in status quo. Hope you're...
Yeah, just...
Continue to turn teams over, continue to dominate in the red zone,
mm-hmm.
and we'll take a look at some of these numbers in a bit, but I think that's... You're hoping the defense just remains what they were.
Right.
And I understand the frustration if you're a Chiefs fan and you're looking at this like, we had this dominant defense, it's been slowly getting worse and worse as the offense slowly gets better and better,
mm-hmm.
and it's just we cannot seem to get both units, you know, at an elite level at the same time. Like,
doesn't it feel like they're on, like, two different paths, because the offense and Mahomes is, like, the ultimate like identifier in this, that they're trying to get younger on offense, you know, but I mean they let Macklin go too, saying that, like, okay, it's time for Tyreek and Conley and, you know, we can say DeMarcus Robinson now, but, like, you know, it's time to change a little bit on offense. But on defense, it's like they've still been sort of hanging on. At the very least, like, you know, the microcosm of that is Derek Johnson and Tamba Ali. These guys that, you know, got significant, somewhat, contracts to stick around, and, like, they just haven't been willing to move away from that veteran leadership. And they didn't really have equivalents to those guys on the offensive side of the ball. But it's like the offense does have that upward trajectory, and the defense has, like you said, kind of been trying to maintain the status quo. And at least so far, it sort of appears like the defense is moving down.
Oh yeah,
that their arrow is pointing down. And despite, like, some of the youthful exuberance that you get from guys like Chris Jones and Marcus Peters, you still know that, like, that defense as a whole, for the most part, they really do seem to be aging. I don't think that it is just a Derek Johnson and a Tamba Ali. Like, Eric Berry is getting older. Ron Parker is getting older.
That's fair. Corners are super young.
Right. And we don't, but we really don't know.
Middle-aged, inside linebackers, we don't know if we have any actual NFL players there.
And really, the defensive line, I think, is sort of unproven, too, really. I mean,
defensive line, relatively young. Yeah.
Well,
it's kind of across the board.
So, let me say this, and then we can move on. Where I'm at right now with the team, and some of this, again, is maybe just, like, Ryan's a homer and he loves the Chiefs. Because I don't want to just, like, sit in the mud and be angry about losing 2 straight games, the positive spin on it is the Chiefs went from playing 3 games in 12 days to we play 2 games over the next month. Literally a month, we have 2 games. Because we went from having a game on October 19th to playing Denver and Dallas until November 19th.
Yep.
So,
and that's what you mean. You look, it's going to help the team because they're banged up. You're looking at a team that almost escaped with a road win on a Thursday night with a banged up team.
Yeah.
Almost got out of Dodge scot-free. And we would have been so joyous because we're like, oh, these reinforcements are coming now. And we escaped with a win there. Everything would have been gravy. And then a few plays go against you.
I do. I know that we've kind of embraced the fact that, like, each of the next 9 games, you know, individually, you don't think that any of them are that important. I do think that the Denver game is. We'll kind of save that end.
I do too. I'm expecting a win, and we will have a probably much different show if we lose next week.
Yeah, I do want to say this with, again, kind of the precursor to it, knowing that, like, the Chiefs are still in great shape to win the division and make the playoffs. I mean, the Raiders are still in last place in the AFC West, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. We already got a road win over the second best team in the AFC West.
So, but here's the thing, though. Like, I do think that with the Chiefs only having 2 games in the next month, having all that extra time to get rested, get your reinforcements, extra time to prepare. And I mean, because really you're looking at having 2 out of the next 3 weeks getting extra time to prepare for games.
Yep.
And
hopefully with that other one, we'll have a star running back suspended. We'll see.
Potentially, yeah. I just...
Ezekiel Watt will be on in next week.
Full effect, yeah.
He might be the difference between winning and losing that game, like, very easily.
He could. Bottom line, I think that the Chiefs have to beat Denver and Dallas. I think they have to win both of those
games. Both? Yeah, I wouldn't say both.
I think
as long as we're in the AFC West, we're going to be there.
Yeah.
Is this team any better at home than on the road?
I don't think so.
Craig Stout on Twitter, we're kind of going back on this. Like, I think we're pretty much the exact same team. And you probably give Pittsburgh and New England a bump at home, despite what we've seen Pittsburgh do at Arrowhead. They struggle everywhere else except Arrowhead. But those teams probably get a bump at home. But the Chiefs, they might be better on the road for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
I can't explain it, but
yeah, I
would call them even at worst.
We had that 9-9 game road winning streak snapped against the Raiders. It's so weird. Like, that means that they've won 9 of their last 10. But I saw this stat like after the Raiders game, and it comes as this gigantic negative, but please, again, let's keep in mind, the Chiefs have won 9 of 10 on the road. But it says the Chiefs have allowed 27 or more in 6 of their last 7 on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, that is kind of crazy to me, and maybe like a perfect segue into the way that this defense has been changing.
I'll also throw in, to make that stat even weirder, the Alex Smith opponent scoring 24 stat, which is kind of... He's kind of eliminated, but still, I mean, the numbers are still very tilted.
Yeah.
So it's all
yeah.
fun to figure out.
Dude, Alex has changed a lot. We'll talk about the offense a little bit later. But defensively, so...
Defense is the story this week.
I mean, Amari Cooper had a day. He had 146 yards and a touchdown in the first 6 games of the season, and he had 95 yards and 2 touchdowns in the first quarter of the game against the Chiefs. He ended the game with over 200 receiving yards, and this is such a stupid statistic. It's one of those that they, like, pull out of their butts.
I love pulling things out of
the
butt.
The first,
love it.
First Raiders player with 200 receiving yards in a game.
Willie Gault.
Since Art Powell... in 1965 against the Boston Patriots.
Ah, I remember that game.
It's so...
Big game for Art.
I mean, it feels so... have Amari Cooper be having such a bad season. And
let's not skip over Amari Cooper dropping a 50-yard pass, which kind of looks like Ron Parker defends. He does not. No, just goes right through his hands.
Nope,
he dropped another 20-yard pass over the middle. He could have gone for close to 300 yards against us, which is concerning.
He could have.
A few other stats just from that game. 32 first downs allowed. That is the most the Chiefs haven't allowed more than that. They've allowed 32 a few other times. Haven't allowed more first downs than that since 1986.
The Raiders had 32
first downs.
Man, I thought the number that they gave up to Pittsburgh was huge, and it wasn't that big, was it?
What, Pittsburgh this year?
Yeah, how many? Pittsburgh was like, no, I thought they had like 16 in the first half or something. They had a bunch.
Yeah. No, I think it was closer to like 28, 29 or something. Because I've given this first down stats a few times this year. We've allowed a lot of first downs. I think we're last in the league. It was the most yards allowed since 2013 versus Denver, which is the Marcus Cooper game. It was the most pass yards allowed since 2010 versus Denver, quarterbacked by...
2010. I don't know.
Kyle Orton.
Man, can I
450 passing yards on.
Before we... I just want to say, Kyle Orton.
Are you about to profess your love for Kyle Orton?
I liked Kyle Orton.
Can we go back to the Matt Castle versus Kyle Orton discussion? Can we rev that up this week?
I genuinely believe,
if we would have kept Kyle Orton, Romeo Crennel would still be our coach.
I don't think that, but, man, I don't know. A lot of things would have been different.
We may have never
taken the epic road trip to the Senior Bowl.
Oh.
Had the Chiefs get
caught. Amateur Hour probably doesn't exist.
Who knows? You guys know.
Because we ain't sitting around talking about Kyle Orton
the
every week.
King of the North! Oh, those were fun.
I just remember how Kyle Orton was very satisfied with taking the backup role in Dallas. He's like, nah, I don't really want to start.
It's fine.
I'm going to get $5 million and just go chill. All right, yeah, I guess.
He didn't plan that out very well, though, because Romo got hurt a few times, and he was like, oh, you mean damn I have to play? Ugh.
Throws the bottle of Evan Williams to the crowd and checks in.
Here we go. So,
the defense.
I mean, everybody on Twitter's real, like, if we were playing...
People on Twitter are mad.
If we were playing...
I don't know if you've checked Twitter, but people are mad.
They are.
It's the game. I feel like they've been mad for a while, like 4 years or something.
It's been bubbling under the surface, but yeah. So we used to play the game "Who you mad at?" and we'll probably resurrect that game. But I mean, right now it seems like if you were to just kind of like take the pulse of social media, I would say people are mad at Bob Sutton.
Bob Sutton.
He's public enemy number one.
Yes.
Most
wanted.
I did. You've seen the Bob Sutton defenders or detractors or folks that are just trying to maybe bring some context. And it's like, you know, Bob Sutton has basically made the Chiefs defense in the top 10 in scoring like each of the last 4 years. But I'm suddenly supposed to believe after two bad weeks that he sucks and he needs to be fired, whatever. But I do think if we want to be fair, over the last 4 years, when the season is over and we get into off-season mode and we try to think about, like, is there something that is maybe holding the team back that isn't Alex Smith? A lot of times, I feel like you and I land on Bob Sutton, right?
Like, yeah.
It's just, like, some of the playoff games or whatnot. I mean, the Pittsburgh one stands as an outlier, but... just because of the number of points that they gave up to Indy and the number of points that they gave up to New England and just like that New England game, it's like you can't do anything.
Yeah, it was kind of the defense letting us down in playoff losses outside of the Pittsburgh game.
Injuries play a huge factor in that, of course. Obviously, as we well know. So the conversation is now what? Like, is it personnel or is it schematic, right?
Correct.
That's kind of where we're at?
Correct. Oh, I mean, everyone wants to fix the defense, and we don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have
like a 5-point plan?
I've got the answer.
All right,
and it starts with this. Hang on, give it a sec. I almost got it. It's really close. It's on the tip of my brain.
Good.
It's on my cerebellum.
Is that the tip?
It's one of the tips. It's my favorite tip. All right, so a deep dive. I wanted to see what was different about the defense this year. From last year, fourth in red zone defense touchdown percentage. That was a lot of what held the defense together, that and turnovers. This year we are 16th.
Okay.
So it's kind of rearing its ugly head a little bit. It's not, we're not covering up our scabs with it like we were last year. Like last year we gave up a lot of yards, and a lot of discussion was points versus yards. We are allowing tons of yards, but we are not allowing tons of points. Well, now we are allowing even more yards and a lot of points.
And so, and here's the thing, though. I wonder, I haven't looked at it, and I'm not trying to derail your deep dive here. I just remember a fairly decent amount of long touchdowns. You know, so like, I can see the, but I guess if the red zone percentage is still in the middle of the pack.
Wouldn't factor.
Yeah, okay.
We're getting to that.
Okay.
Hold that thought. Opponent second half scoring. So this one you'd kind of point at Bob Sutton, right?
We're
making adjustments at halftime.
Killing people in the second half those first few weeks.
2016, we were third in opponent second half scoring.
Not differential, just like holding
just
teams.
Points allowed on defense.
Okay.
This season, we are 24th.
That's not good.
And here's the big one. Here's the one that's making me think the Chiefs have had a systemic failure on defense. Because we all talk about the Chiefs are rushing 3 or 4 a lot. We're not bringing blitzes. We're playing a bend but don't break defense. We're all pretty much in agreement there. And then I saw a stat floating around last week that the Chiefs are giving up more big plays than anybody. So I looked it up. 20-plus yard passes. The Chiefs are 31st this year. We've allowed the second most 20-plus yard passes. 40-yard passes, we are dead last. We've allowed more 40-yard passes than anybody else in the NFL. So we're playing a bend-but-don't-break defense, but we're breaking all over the place. We're playing a bend-and-break defense. And that doesn't necessarily point to the coach over the players because, I mean, it's on them too. I mean, there's plenty of plays where we have double coverage going on and we're allowing catch. But I thought that was interesting that that's why I think the defense isn't working, because its design is to limit the big plays and make the defense work extra hard and make them lose their patience, and that leads to turnovers, or the defense buckles up in the red zone and stops them down there, and they're not quite doing that either this year. So the defense as a whole is just, it's a failure. It's a failure so far.
So there's a couple things that I think of with that. Man, it sounds like such a cliche, and I'm not just trying to go to this because it sounds like I'm not creative enough to come up with something better, but they always say that pass rush and pass coverage, that they work together. That like it, that's kind of the harmony on defense. That if you're good in coverage, then you get what's called a coverage sack, right? But a lot of times they talk about like the different pressures and the knockdowns, and they combine all those things. It's not just sacks, it's getting after the quarterback and making him quote unquote move off of his spot or rushing throws. And I mean, the first few weeks it seemed like they were doing okay in that department. Maybe a lot of that having to do with the way that Justin Houston was playing, or the one big game from Chris Jones. But it certainly seems in the two losses, like you can see those problems, that they haven't really been pressuring Ben Roethlisberger or Derek Carr. And so here's the thing. Like, one or the other has to tangibly get better in order for both of them to get better. Like, you think that if they do work together, but I don't think that like just both of them are going to get like a little bit better. Like you have to see an actual change in doing something a little bit different or being more effective either in covering or in getting after the quarterback.
Which pretty much means they have to change their strategy.
Right.
Because, I mean, unless you're looking at Steven Nelson coming back or Tom Ali coming back being the answer,
or some like personnel getting wise, healthier, or
Justin Houston getting healthier,
having like a hot stretch.
Justin Houston has not been the same player since injuring his calf two weeks ago.
Yeah.
He's also gone up against two really good offensive lines, mm-hmm. and has dropped in coverage, you know, as much as you want to say, like, I know that's been a dead horse beaten on Twitter.
I will say, someone put the stat out about, like, the actual number of snaps, and I'm guessing I think it's PFF.
Yeah.
But it was about 25% of the
time. I knew it wasn't as much as people were thinking, but it just stands out.
People still think that that's too much, but, like, really, I guess if I'm looking at it, like, I would think that maybe, like, 20 to 25% is probably, like, the sweet spot if you're wanting to be able to, you know, at least have some sort of element of surprise. Like, you have to drop him into coverage. It doesn't, like, the only guy that probably never dropped into coverage, you're talking about, what, like, Lawrence Taylor and Derek Thomas, who were essentially pass-rushing specialists, and they probably still did, not 20%.
And, like, Von Miller's probably a good comparison because he's playing 4-3 outside linebacker.
Right. Do you think that...
Well, I see the strategy of it. The offensive line is going to be paying extra attention to Justin Houston. Probably have two guys assigned to him, basically. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't rush him, then you got two guys who need to figure it out or just sitting there blocking nobody.
Sure.
So, like, I see the idea of it. And I also think we're bashing the Chiefs for their strategy going into the Raiders game, when I think it was essentially the same strategy used to completely shut down the Raiders last year. And I got scared right before the game, like, I mean, can they really not figure this out? Like, we did it to them twice last year. They've seen Pittsburgh do it to us twice since. Kind of, I don't know if I'd say figure it out, but move the ball on us consistently against our style of defense. Like, are the Raiders offensive coaches so inept that they can't figure this out? Mm-hmm. And I guess we saw them figure it out. I get what Sutton was doing, but I'd also like to see an overhaul. I would like to resort back to 2013 defense. I would like to go back to press coverage on the outside and an exotic blitz scheme. I would like to just completely change it up. Because what we're doing, I think, has been figured out. Like, it's kind of been the flavor of the month in the NFL to rush three and drop eight. Like, that's what you're seeing a lot of NFL teams doing, and it's being successful, and maybe we're starting to see it swing back. Like, teams are starting to figure it out, and they're learning how to attack it. Just sit there. Be patient in the pocket. Wait for someone to open up, or just find the one-on-one coverage and throw jump balls, which I think is a lot of what the Raiders did.
Yeah. So, I mean, a couple things come to mind here, and the first one for me is just that I keep seeing this stat that the Chiefs are playing in man coverage like 65 to 70% of the time, which is like 20% more than the rest of the league. And, you know, the thing that it seems like really forced Alex Smith and the offense to struggle against Pittsburgh, and ultimately in kind of geeking out a little bit and looking at some of the next-gen stats, in our pod after that game, one of the things that we talked about briefly was, like, the Chiefs offense didn't look like themselves, and one of the reasons was because you didn't see a lot of, like, the pre-snap motion and stuff. And just in listening and doing some reading, it said the biggest reason that they didn't is because they used that to, yes, create some misdirection, but to also, like, give them a clue as to what the defense is doing by watching how players travel when guys go in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And because Pittsburgh plays zone like 80% of the time,
it didn't matter.
It doesn't. Yeah, there's no point in having them run across the formation because we know that Pittsburgh's in zone.
Yeah.
And so, like, I wonder if maybe changing it and allowing the guys or asking the guys to play a little bit more zone, like, if that would help. I don't know if it would or not, but it would be a change that yep. Sutton could use. I do like the idea of playing more aggressively on defense.
Because my thing is, if you're going to give up the big plays, be aggressive in doing it. Like, right. We're being conservative and giving up the big plays. Like, we're not having our cake and we're not eating it too. so be it. Hey, you like that?
I do.
So, it's because I've been watching the Unabomber special on Netflix, and that was how they cracked the Unabomber case, but yeah, it's neither here nor there. So I think if you're more aggressive and maybe start focusing on taking away the run more, hopefully you still give up the same amount of big plays in the passing game, but you're also sack count goes up, your run defense gets better, and maybe your easy third and three plays that we're giving teams, it seems like, hopefully we take some of those away. Like, start winning in different ways on defense.
Well, so the other side of the coin is that there's some problems with execution, or some problems with whether it's just health or overall personnel. Like, I am personally unwilling to, like, place all of the blame on scheme. It can't just be Bob Sutton. Like, there have to be...
No, these debates are never 100% someone's fault. It's always...
Right.
Partials.
And I know that Seth has been, like, grinding pretty hard, especially after the Raiders game, and he said that he wanted to, like, bust up some narratives or whatnot. And
pound the table on some narratives.
And mainly, I think it was... A lot of it was about execution from the players, rather than just blaming it on Bob Sutton. That, like, look at this play. It was essentially called the right way, and guys are in position to make the play, and they don't. Which is kind of how the Pittsburgh game ended. Like, people got mad at Philip Gaines. Maybe they got mad at Bob Sutton. But it's like, look, I mean, there are two guys in position to make this play against Antonio Brown. And then, you know, the worst possible thing happens.
Yeah.
How the personnel on defense will change is that Steven Nelson is, at this point, it looks like really kind of gearing up to play Monday night against Denver. A couple things to keep in mind, and I'll say this just to benefit those that maybe don't pay as close attention as we do. Like I talked a little bit on Twitter last night with Tom Fair, TGF Sports, and Tom was like, you know, You're talking about Steven Nelson. Like, it's been so long since he's played, I don't remember, like, what he did or who he is. Like, how is he going to help?
Mm-hmm.
Well, PFF will tell you that Steven Nelson was, like, the fifth best corner against the slot in the NFL last year. I will tell you that had he not gotten hurt, Steven Nelson is the number two corner. He is. He will be on the field.
He was last year. It was a huge misconception that Terrence Mitchell was actually the number two corner.
No.
People always have the hardest time grasping this. Just because somebody plays slot cornerback does not mean they're necessarily the third corner.
And it doesn't necessarily...
You can play outside like Steven Nelson did, and then when you go three corners, slide inside.
Right. I was going to say, and it doesn't necessarily mean that because they play slot corner means that they never play outside, because... He will, when there are only two corners on the field, it will be Marcus Peters and Steven Nelson.
Even when Mitchell was balling out last year, it was Steven Nelson who was playing every snap and Terrence Mitchell playing 60% of the snaps.
Right. And so, I mean, what I think is safe to say is that, like, when they deem Steven Nelson 100% healthy, which... If he plays against the Broncos, that doesn't mean he's 100%. That means, you know, we're just going to let him get out there and get his legs under him.
So it might be the third corner.
Right. Maybe. And he may not even, you know, you might still see a healthy dose of Philip Gaines and Steven Nelson gets to play some special teams and gets 10 or 15 defensive snaps. You have no idea.
Let me also say, with your Steve Nelson fifth best slot corner last year, I believe Philip Gaines is still the dead last ranked corner on PFF this year.
Of anybody?
Of all corners.
Oh, well, that's not good.
not good.
I don't think that Philip Gaines is, quote-unquote, that bad. I do think that the Chiefs' defense is still, even if it didn't look like it until they started losing, I think that the defense is still, like, having to tinker a lot and make some major adjustments to not having Eric Berry.
Yes.
And they're figuring out, like, how to play and how to put guys in the best position, and they haven't been able to do that.
I think you saw our safeties exposed against Oakland. That was a big problem. I think they got Daniel Sorensen deep a couple times, including on that Jared Cook catch at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the play early on that Amari Cooper 40-yard catch on, like, 2nd and 20. Like, that's when you would have hoped to shut them down. That's 2nd and 20 for the Raiders. Or maybe it was 1st and 20, but 20 yards to go to get the first down. Like, that's when you're hoping to get a stop. And Amari Cooper has double coverage and just completely roasts Terrence Mitchell. Daniel Sorensen nowhere to be seen. Like, that's obviously execution.
I I just want to say...
But also Murray going against tight ends. He looked like a child trying to cover Jared Cook on some of those.
Yeah. I mean, Cook is a tough matchup.
He was, what, 8 inches shorter and 70 pounds lighter or something? Like, there's on some of those catches, there's just nothing he can do. And these are things that Eric Berry can do very well.
Yeah.
And he's not much bigger than Eric Murray, I guess, but still, you'd give him a better chance against Jared Cook. Also playing deep safety over Daniel Sorensen. Like, we saw our safeties exposed a bit.
And the stats don't really bear it out for Jared Cook, but, like, he's had some good seasons.
He's an athletic
for sure. And, the guy's a monster. Like, he's bigger than Vernon Davis, but, like, in some ways, equally as athletic. Like, that guy he's a freak. I think that adding Nelson will help a lot, if for no other reason than you are eliminating Philip Gaines from playing, like, regular, meaningful snaps. I think that it upgrades your defense pretty significantly because you're getting a starter back. Like, we keep talking about adding these starters back on the offensive line and how they think that'll change it, but, like, we're missing a starting corner. And so when you're losing two starters in your secondary, like, that's a problem. When or if or how Tomba comes back, like, I don't...
Tomba's name is... It's weird.
I don't...
It's almost like he's not coming back.
Right, and like he's
being skipped over by Andy Reid when asked about it, and I know they're mum on every injury. Like, you never know what's going on with the Chiefs injury.
He's been eligible to come back for 2 weeks now, I think.
After six weeks? Yeah, could have been back for this last game.
Okay, so for the Raiders game. All right. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. And he's old. We've been talking about, like, wanting to, like, have people be fresh for the playoffs. So, I mean, I don't know. How do you balance the how fresh can a guy that's 30-some-odd years old that's played that many snaps with many injuries be?
And I kind of think they're waiting till the bye, maybe.
Maybe they wait till
the bye week and then go with Tomba Activio.
Here's the biggest thing for me. Like, I think that if one or the other, the secondary or the pass rush, is going to improve, it's going to be, like, in terms of personnel, Steven Nelson is the biggest coup that the defense is going to get for the rest of the season. Like, the biggest addition.
What was his injury? Do you remember?
I thought it was, like, oblique. Like, he hurt his stomach or something in some way.
My oblique's a little sore today, too.
Oh. Okay. Well, I don't know what he's going through. But I hope that you don't have to be on the shelf for 8 more weeks. I know what he's going
through. It could have been me.
So, in terms of personnel, Steven Nelson is maybe the biggest addition. And I don't know if the improvement of Steven Nelson, you know, getting to play at some point, like, 100% of the snaps on defense, which reduces the number of times that Terrence Mitchell's on the field, which drastically reduces the number of times that Philip Gaines is on the field. I don't know, like, how much that helps versus, hopefully, Justin Houston's calf is no longer having to be monitored. Man, I start hearing about calf. I start thinking about Achilles. I just, like, don't... I don't really want to go down that path.
But why would you think that with a Kansas City Chiefs player?
Yeah, I have no idea. But I
don't
just
see the connection. I fail to see the connection.
I think that your options are kind of limited in terms of personnel and like, who's going to get added or maybe who's going to improve. But I don't know. Why don't we take a look at your...
Let's dive in.
Defensive
survey.
Spreadsheet. Survey.
Survey.
Okay.
Big data collector over here. Love collecting me some data. So I asked the fine folks to follow me on the Twitter to fill out a little simple survey. Nothing groundbreaking here. It was just rate players 1 through 10 on how good they are right now. So that's it. Let's go through kind of position by position here. So the defensive line, and we'll just share what people voted. Allen Bailey, 6.29. Benny Logan, 6.56. Chris Jones, 7.55. So people are relatively high on the defensive line. What jumps out to you from those three?
I think that nose tackle is kind of a thankless position. It always has been. And I know that you thought, I don't remember which game it was, but you thought that Logan was kind of like quietly dominant in Houston. One game against Texas. Houston. And I do think that the run defense against the Raiders was vastly improved.
It was okay. Still giving up 4 yards a carry.
Yeah, still not great.
But it's that's what you'd expect from a Sutton defense, is that.
I think that people's perception is Chris Jones is better than Benny Logan, is better than Alan Bailey. And, like, so the ratings kind of bear that out.
Yes.
Right? In terms of how that worked. If I had to tell you of the three, like, who has been the consistently best player, I don't know what my answer would be. Like, and I might be inclined to tell you that it's Alan Bailey.
Mm.
And I don't know, because Alan Bailey gets the benefit of getting to play next to Justin Houston all the time. So, like, you don't run at Justin Houston, which means you kind of don't run at Alan Bailey either. So, like, I don't know. The numbers are skewed. The 3-4 is really hard to look at.
Yeah.
I would say probably my biggest takeaway is that Chris Jones is the best of those guys, but I don't think that he has played the best.
Chris Jones needs to be more consistent. He had the one game where he totally dominated. Was it San Diego?
I thought it was Philly. No, it was San Diego, where he had all the sacks and got the pick at the end of the game. And
yeah. He had a pick?
Yeah, he got an interception.
Oh.
Justin Houston, I think, tipped it. You know, it hit off someone's head, right?
I can tell you about an Eric Warfield interception in 1999, but I can't tell you who had an interception.
Didn't it hit someone's helmet?
Fuck off.
No, that was the Albert Wilson caught the ball after it hit someone's helmet. I don't know. Chris
that
Jones
was still up gains off the helmet. Chris Jones, I think, needs to be more consistent. I've been impressed with Benny Logan, although I'm not sure how much he's helping in rushing the passer or in really stopping the run. So I don't. Maybe I'm overrating, but I feel like I've seen numerous plays where I thought he did his job really well.
Mm-hmm.
I like my grading system is essentially watching the game, and if I see a good play, I say his name. Good job, Benny Logan. And then I kind of keep a running tally in my head of whose name I'm saying.
Yeah. It's a simple but effective system.
Benny Logan!
So, I think that there have been times where I've seen Benny Logan, like, in the backfield and not necessarily getting to the quarterback, but, like, that what we talked about, like, making the quarterback move and not just be able to stand back there. And I do feel like he's maybe done that more than I was accustomed to seeing with Dontari Poe over the last couple seasons. But, man, I hate, like, the 2-4 that we go into.
Yeah.
I just don't like it. I don't like the two defensive linemen that we really seem to stick with. Because I think it makes both of those defensive linemen, like, less effective and more predictable. Like, I don't think it really helps your front. Like,
it might be the strength of our defense. Because we kind of like all three of these guys, right?
Yeah.
And we're spending a lot of plays without all three on the field.
I'd also say
where Nunez Roches is hardly getting any snaps.
Was he included in there?
No.
So
mostly starters, and then I threw in Gaines and Murray because I feel like they're playing a lot. Nunez Roches is playing like 7 snaps a game.
And that's what I was about to say, was like, I think that maybe he needs to be incorporated more because he is kind of that slasher, that like penetrating defensive lineman. And like in terms of like starter talent, I do think that each of the three are better than him, but that doesn't mean that he can't be like a really important factor in the defense. And 7 snaps is not enough to get it done, I don't think. So, I mean, I'd probably like to see a little more R&R.
Yeah.
And not just over the next couple of weeks, because the Chiefs only play 2 games in a month.
Me too.
That was...
I would like to see more defensive line in general.
Except just Jenkins.
More play.
No Jenkins.
Although I like Roy Miller. Roy Miller, I think, has played decently.
Yeah, he's not really seeing the field either, huh? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if, like, being more fresh helps them. But I think I don't know. I think they can do some things. And I don't. Some of that, it falls on Sutton.
I feel like Alan Bailey's been the disappointing one, me personally. This is not the first time I've felt like this in Alan Bailey's career, when other people have been more impressed with him. But then... You know, our guy Justice has the stats on, you know, he releases a stat every week. It's sacks plus tackles for loss. Mm-hmm. And Alan Bailey was one of the top defenders in the league in terms of tackles for loss, which doesn't match what I've seen personally. He had 9 tackles for loss on the season. I haven't seen that personally, so I'm kind of backing off on it. I'm not going to... Yeah, it could be that. So I'm not going to lambast him, I guess. But if I had to say one has been disappointing, I would say Alan Bailey.
I think that, like, of the three, for me, and maybe this is, like, where these conversations get a little complicated and nerdy, but, like, my expectations for Alan Bailey were lower than for Chris Jones and Benny Logan.
Yes.
And so I think that, like...
Well, Bailey and Logan are about the same for me.
I guess that's... Yeah.
Chris Jones should be the best defensive lineman. I'm not sure that he has been.
It is worth saying that the number one thing that was the complaint about Chris Jones coming out of college was that he would disappear for long stretches, not just like inside of an individual game, but like for weeks at a time.
That's very fair.
And so,
very fair.
As he has now like officially been a starter, but like still at the beginning of the season wasn't fully healthy, right? Like there was a question about when he was going to be ready, and then he just was, and so he's playing. I mean, I don't know, like, at this point in the season if he would be more healthy. Like, it's you know, you're entering week 8 of the NFL season. Who's healthy right now? But I would like to see a little more consistency out of him. Because I'd say right now, like, you get to see it, but, like, man, they are not affecting the quarterback as much as I think we're accustomed to or we expect. And that's frustrating.
Yeah, for sure.
How about the linebackers?
Let's move on to the linebackers. D Ford with a 5.5 rating. Derek Johnson, 5.4. Reggie Ragland, 4.5. Justin Houston, 8.1.
So basically, Justin Houston's good and everybody else
is mediocre.
I think it's probably generous for Ragland. Like, what has he done?
I think it's generous for DJ and Ragland. DJ's having a tough time. I mean, he's a tough one to rate because we have all these personal feelings with Derek Johnson tied up.
Can I say that I think that Derek Johnson played his best game of the season against Oakland, and it didn't necessarily...
No, you cannot say that. You've gone too far. You cannot give him any compliments.
I didn't think that it had, like, a tremendous impact on the game because we gave up 31 points and lost, but, like, more maybe, like, memorable Derek Johnson made a play plays than at any point so far this season.
I remember tweeting out a DJ special at one point, and then, like, 2 plays later, he did something that was very... ungood. So I tweeted out DJ unspecial.
I did see were saying that the ball that Houston batted down, Derek Johnson was about to intercept and take back for 6. I saw that play.
I remember one where Mitchell was going to intercept it.
Well, there's...
We had a bat down and Mitchell was driving on a slant and he was all over it. But I do not remember that one.
Well, and
so
that's assuming Derek Johnson would have caught it. Let's not forget that he's had issues with that in the past.
I don't know. Ragland, I feel like I've seen one good play from him all year. One name drop from me during a game.
Yeah,
that's when it was just like a closing speed on Deshaun Watson. Didn't really affect the play, really. It was just like, holy shit, he's fast.
So,
I mean, he's there to help stop the run, and we're not stopping the run, so I don't...
I'm just going to come out and say it. I don't know why Ramique Wilson isn't playing.
Yes, I agree.
And I would say that right now, if I had to, out of thin air, give you a reason for it, I think that the Chiefs are trying to let Reggie Ragland figure it out on the field because they think that, like, long term, of all the guys they have, Reggie Ragland has, like, the most potential talent and impact at linebacker. So they're just playing. Like, get the snaps. Get healthy, get game ready, get better, and just go through the growing pains.
I kind of agree.
We will see that at other positions, but he hasn't made an impact on the game.
I kind of wonder if we see some Ramique Wilson with, I mean, the struggles that have come.
It's about time,
it,
right?
It kind of lines up with our defense got quite a bit worse with Ragland coming on, and that's not saying it's all Ragland's fault, obviously, but Vermeek Olsen wasn't doing anything bad. He wasn't doing anything wrong, and he just lost his job.
Yeah, I mean, they just... And it was, like, surprising when they were like, oh, Reggie Ragland is active. Oh, Reggie Ragland's going to play against Washington. Oh, man. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, excited. And frankly, I mean, it's a little muted right now, but, like, I'm still excited for what he can be. But, man, like, if I'm being completely honest about it, the way that we heard Reggie Ragland play during the preseason before he had the season-ending injury with Buffalo, this is like mirroring Justin March Lillard. Like, all these people talked about how good he was and how excited they were, and then, like, it never really showed up on the field, and then the Chiefs got rid of him, and Buffalo sort of did the same thing, just in quicker fashion, because the Chiefs gave up a draft pick for him, and, you know, Lillard was undrafted, so it didn't really matter.
Yep.
But that's kind of what it feels like. It's like, I haven't seen it from Reggie Ragland.
Also of note, don't watch a Redskins game with me this year, because I'm just going to sit there and fawn over Zach Brown and how fucking good he is. He's my favorite non-Chief to watch in the NFL right now. That dude is a wrecking ball. Just destroying offenses. Man, I love him. And he signed for so cheap. Like, he's
what we hoped Joe Mays would be.
Yeah, yeah, he's a rich man's Joe Mays. God, he is so good. And he signed for $2.5 million. Like, we could have easily squeezed that in. He didn't sign until, like, June either. He just sat out there.
I think it's like made no sense to me.
He's going to get a big deal.
And locker room and, like...
Cool, give me that.
Plays on the edge.
He'd fit in.
Yeah.
Dee Ford. Let's go with the D Honda of the week. Is Ford Fluff. Ford Fluff.
Okay.
Because I feel like he acquired some pressure somehow, but I never really noticed him. So yeah. It was all fluff to me.
So let me ask you this. What was his rating again?
5.5. Hey!
Look at that!
Look at that.
And I think that it's also, like, really representative of, do we know if D. Ford's good or not?
No. We have no idea.
5.5 out of 10.
We have no idea.
I don't know.
He's the Bob Sutton of the players on defense.
I will say this much. I think D's been okay. Again, like, as far as trying to create pressure as a pass rusher, like, I think he's okay. I tell you what, though, man. They like, picked up the option. I don't think that they should pay D Ford next year. I don't think that they should keep him around. They have the ability to cut him before, like, a certain date or whatever in order to not have to pay him. The only thing that the fifth-year option guarantees is, like, if he gets hurt, then he definitely gets the money. And so, like, he has this, like, next year, they can cut him with zero dead cap. It would save almost $9 million. It's 8.7. Like, I just, even if D ends up with 10 sacks again, like, I don't want to pay him $9 million next year.
Well, he's someone who's always going to be a liability in the run game. I don't think that's ever going to come around. So you're paying for a player with a known liability.
And I know that, like, the resources, like, the draft resources are going to be limited. And maybe even some of the financial resources are going to be limited, because you're talking about, like, depending on who they get rid of and whatnot, you know that you still need an influx of talent at certain positions. But, like, man, I think that you could more effectively spend $9 million on the open market trying to get a pass rusher. And even if it's not just who can I pay $9 million, like, I'd rather not pay $9 million to D and pay $11 or $12 to someone else in order to get the kind of upgrade that I would get.
Yep. I mean, if you do get rid of him, you have to. I mean, even if you don't get rid of him, you have to address the pass rush.
Oh, 100%.
Because our pass rush might be, like, our weakest, you know, important unit right now, and D Ford is, if not your best, your second best.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess not. I mean, Justin Houston would be the best, even though he's not showing it in the last 2 weeks. But
yeah, Mellinger had a comment on him, and I would just say, like, I think that the number that we're giving Justin Houston in those ratings is a little high for me personally. Mellinger had a comment that it was something like, if you watch the team over the last couple games, and I told you that, like, Justin Houston is, you know, an elite defensive player, there's nothing on tape that backs that up.
Yeah.
And Seth might jump in and be like, you are wrong, sir, and I will show you with all of these GIFs on my timeline.
GIFs.
But I just... He's not right. He's not right.
Right. Yeah, now. I would agree. We've also gone against two of the best three offensive lines coming into the season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe they haven't played up to their standards this year. But it was the Cowboys, Raiders, and Steelers that were viewed as, you know, hand over foot, the best offensive lines in the league.
And scoring offenses and yardage offenses in the NFL, like, the Chiefs have played, like, three or four of the top 10 in both scoring and in yardage. And, like, really, I mean, who's the worst team that the Chiefs have played this year? The Raiders? And the Raiders had their best game of the season. And that some of that may have to do with playing the Chiefs, but, like, we got their best. And, yep. I mean, that was the kind of thing that I talked about before that game, was just like, listen, if you want to be the best team in the league, if that's what you want to claim, then you know, like New England, you're going to get everybody's best shot every week.
Yep.
And
we don't want to be the best team. We want to be, like, the second or third best team and sneak in.
Exactly. The secondary.
Secondary. Marcus Peters, 7.1. Terrence Mitchell, 5.7. Gaines, 2.9. Sorensen, 5.3. Parker, 6.3. The underrated Ron Parker, mind you. Eric Murray,
4.3. Man,
can I say something about your boy?
Marcus Peters?
Marcus Peters. I don't really like the way he's playing this year.
I think that...
I feel like he's losing his head a few times. That pass interference on the deep one, it was so unnecessary. And it just seemed like he lost his concentration and just, like, did it for no reason. When it's just like, look up or trust your defender that's right there, but you can't commit PI right there. You can't commit a 50-yard PI.
I didn't understand it. It was like, was that poorly timed or was that just, like, just a stupid play?
It looked like he was just, like, frustrated and, like, took it out on Amari Cooper, like, mid-play, and it's just like, we can't be having that. And there was a 3rd and 4 earlier, which was just a rollout to his side, and it's just like a simple little out route going right to him, and maybe this is scheme, maybe he's not supposed to be pressing right there, but it was so easy when it was just, like, obvious. Like, he starts a rollout, like, here comes the out right at the sticks, like, you know where this is coming, and Peters is just kind of, like, lazily sitting off, you know, 8 yards.
I think that... when it comes to, so you said that, like, Terrence Mitchell is one of the best at defending, like, the 8 yard stop pattern.
Yeah, that's debatable at this point.
I would say that is the best way to try to quote unquote beat Marcus Peters. Fast routes, because he gives so much cushion. Those quicker routes, like, they're pretty much just there. He's willing to give you that. And if it's a longer developing route where they start running across the field, it's more time for Peters to be able to try to make a play on it. And
what about this? Is he getting bored?
He could be.
Cause
I mean,
we want an engaged Marcus Peters, and that's my fear, is that he's not always engaged. Or at that one point, I thought he lost his head a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know what would change that? He's chasing a number one receiver around. They're going to be John all game. He's going to be fully engaged. Put him in press fucking coverage on the best receiver all game. See what happens. You're going to get the best out of Marcus Peters when you do that, I think.
You hope. I mean, but they might be worried that, like, Peters can't handle that challenge because it's so high stakes every single play. And that, like,
I feel like that's what you want for him. Like I think you want the high stakes. I think
they just don't want him to become more volatile than he is. And you've seen, like, you know, if Josh Norman travels with Odell Beckham all game long, like, what that can lead to, and they don't want that kind of
outburst. Or Peters versus Keenan Allen, where however that worked out so many times that week one.
I'm always quick to defend him, obviously. I like him a lot. I don't really like the way that he's playing. I do think that there are things about his game that like frustrate a lot of people, and I'm with the idea that he might be bored, which sucks because he's been caught a few times. Some of those I do think you could maybe argue for penalties, but like he's been beat as many times as maybe the offensive guy should have been penalized on the play too. And he's made some stupid plays in there. I like the idea of maybe having him travel at least a little bit. We talked about like just trying to do something different and make the other team adjust. And what that is or how, you know, Bob Sutton chooses to do that, if he chooses to do that, is unknown at this point. And I don't think that like not having Eric Berry on the field has impacted him that much, because he kind of is almost always like he's over there by himself, you know? Man, it's one of those situations where it sucks to be so reductive about it, but like there's so many little things that just aren't going right on defense that it's like, that's why you have position coaches, you know? It's not like it's almost more about Emmett Thomas than it is about Bob Sutton of like, hey, Marcus, this is what we need to do in these different situations. And that's where when it comes to like you and I trying to say, well, here's all the things that they need to do right. Like we need some interns in order to maybe have them focus on some of that stuff. For me, it's kind of hard to say, oh man, like this is maybe a problem with Marcus Peters, when like Marcus is the best player in the secondary because Eric Berry's
on the field. No doubt, but we need him to play like the best player.
He definitely, I'm still a little bit leery of like all the primetime games, and we get a little bit of a break after the Monday night against Denver. And a lot of people have been calling Denver like the get right game. Is there anything else on the secondary?
Those ratings. Let's see. Terrence Mitchell. I like Terrence Mitchell, but he's given up a lot of yards this year. I think you retweeted something that was 570 yards or something this year, which would
And it was like six touchdowns.
Yeah. He's given up a lot. I mean, he gets thrown it a ton. I'm sure he's towards the top of like targets towards him.
Yeah. And his number of plays go down when Steven Nelson is healthy and can be there.
But he makes a lot of good plays, and I like his fight. And he's made some big plays. I think it was New England where he broke up that deep one to Cooks at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I like a lot of things about him, but he's also given up a ton of yards. Sorensen, he needs to stay in the box. I don't like him deep at all.
I like Sorensen against tight ends more than Eric Murray.
You think?
I kind of would prefer to see Sorensen on the tight ends and like letting Murray kind of play at the back of the defense. I look at Eric Murray a lot like Ron Parker.
Murray's been chasing tight ends. Pretty much that's it.
Yeah.
That's all he's done.
And he reminds me of Ron Parker, and my assumption was that he was kind of the eventual replacement for Parker, because it's like, it's a guy that has played corner.
He has a corner safety hybrid.
And when you listen to Ron Parker talk about like how it changed for him, was like, man, when I was at corner and I was so close to the action, like I was constantly having to kind of like predict, you know? And like when I'm at safety, like just being able to look at everything from a completely different position, it's like it just opened up my ability to like play football a lot better. And if it's like, I don't want Eric Murray as a safety running around in man coverage on guys that are routinely more close to, you know, Jared Cook's size than they are to Eric Murray's size.
Well, and that's a problem. I mean, Mike Lombardi has the theory, build your secondary like a basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
We've got no center or power forward.
I mean,
we're all short guys.
Technically Mitchell, but like,
dude, is he tall?
Yeah, I think he's like 6'2".
Okay.
But I mean, really, like your guy that can play in the post right now is technically Sorensen.
Well, here's the problem. You saw what Jared Cook did. How are we going to cover Gronkowski? Eric Berry eliminated him in that game. Eric Berry ain't coming back. How are we stopping Rob Gronkowski? Who can cover him?
Yeah, I don't know. But...
Yeah. Nobody. Hope he gets hurt.
Maybe New England loses. Who knows? I mean, no, that's a great point.
Ron Parker, I mean, I think he's great next to Eric Berry.
Everybody looks so much better when Eric Berry's on
and
the field.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
He hasn't come up with any plays. I think he's just been a guy out there
this
year. So that's it. Nothing groundbreaking on the rankings. Just wanted to see where everybody was at in terms of the players versus the scheme, trying to get to the bottom of that. But that concludes the data analysis on that.
So we've gone for 70 minutes. I want to do some rapid fire and get out of here. But
ba-ba-ba.
So real quick, offensively. Number one, Alex Smith was friggin' magical against the Raiders. He was so great. I thought his pass to Tyreek on the touchdown was the best pass of his career. Not hyperbole, like, that's the best pass I've ever seen Alex throw.
Yeah.
It was so awesome.
It was perfect.
And it was really fun to go, like, oh, well, all right, Andy, let's dial up the 99-yard play. And it was the three plays for 99 yards.
And DeMarcus might have broke free. I feel like people are blaming Alex for the DeMarcus, though. I feel like DeMarcus didn't play it perfectly well. He could have caught that while remaining in stride, and he kind of, in his adjustment, fell to the ground.
Yeah. I thought that...
Alex was great. My only problem...
It was incredible.
...was that final play, our third down, three-man rush, and Mack destroys Fisher. Fisher, the most unclutch...
Was that the one-handed?
No.
That was earlier in the game?
Fisher's the most unclutch offensive lineman in the league because our two biggest plays this year against the Steelers and Raiders, he's just been completely roasted.
Also,
and pretty much like lost the game for us at the most crucial time. What's up?
I said also the playoff game.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know.
It's fine.
Alex just needed to step up there. So the only with him throwing downfield, I think the only big complaint about Alex Smith, the quarterback, is his pocket presence and how he slides around in the pocket. And I feel like Mac's coming around edge on that one, and he just needs to feel it, recognize it, and just step up. Because if he just takes one step up, Fisher's able to push him behind him, and then he's got all day, because it's a three-man rush, he can either step up and run or just has a lot of time to find an open man. And if you complete that play, the Chiefs pretty much win that game.
It might be asking a lot when you're essentially like missing your three starting interior offensive linemen. I don't know.
It's a one play complaint. It just happened to be the biggest play of the game.
Yeah. You mentioned DeMarcus Robinson. If I were Terrez Paylor, I would say that DeMarcus has some juice.
Cuckoo-ka-juice.
He's fantastic. Like I know that it's a two game sample size, and one of them it was just like, man, he was open a lot and didn't get thrown to.
Yep.
And in this game, you know, he still didn't have like fantastic stats, but it was like, oh my gosh, he really does look open a lot.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much stepped into that Conley route or Conley role, playing every snap,
and it's
running all the routes,
kind of seamless. And Robinson looks great going down the field.
Yep.
I mean, and Terrez had kind of said that.
He looked like an NFL receiver.
Runs a great post, and I think that, I don't know if I've seen so many people so excited with this little evidence about a player for a while. Like,
yeah.
It seems like people are, I haven't really heard anyone say, oh, I don't know, maybe he's good. I don't know. Like, people want, like, We are all like buying DeMarcus Robinson stock right now.
Yeah, is he at a higher point right now than Conley has ever been?
I don't know. I mean,
Conley's just kind of always been there.
Yeah,
not really producing. And we've talked about how his role might change or his stats might change. I guess if Mahomes is in there instead of Alex, like he might be the guy that benefits the most.
Robinson,
but he's never really produced at anything that was noteworthy. He's always just been kind of a four-catch, 52-yard kind of guy, which might be what DeMarcus Robinson was at, but it was also his first game. And
I'll say this.
And looks better on the field, like better in the eye test?
Yeah, I'll say this. Robinson looks more explosive, and Conley looks maybe more consistent, if you will.
Okay.
But I think that that's actually great.
Conley's more using his body and stronger hands kind of thing.
Right. And
they could be a good pair.
I think they could be a good pair, and especially when you get to add Tyreek in there, like,
hey,
it could be setting up pretty nice for one Patrick Mahomes, eventually.
For one 2019 season.
The last thing on the offense real quick, on the eye test, for me, I think that Kareem Hunt is already wearing down. Like, I don't need statistical evidence. I just think that his body is starting to wear down. He looks a little bit slower to me. And I don't know if it has to do with the offensive line. I think that it is absolutely fair to say that. I mean, it's also fair for people to criticize me in saying that, how could you say he's wearing down? He's got 100 yards in each of his first 7 games of, you know, from scrimmage. He's only the second player in NFL history to go over 1,000 yards in his first 7 career games, and wow. Eric Dickerson was the first guy to do that.
He was all right.
I mean, like, there are a lot of things about Kareem Hunt to be excited about.
Go on.
The biggest thing for me, we keep regurgitating and retweeting and getting excited about Kareem Hunt and all these broken tackles. He already has more broken tackles in 7 weeks than Ezekiel Elliott had all of last season. Can we please stop pretending like that's a good thing? It's not. I don't care how many broken tackles he has. Like, it's fun to imagine that, oh, he's so elusive and, oh, he's so strong. He's required to break, like, 3 tackles to get to the line of scrimmage on every play. It's not a good thing. It could be good if he had Dallas's offensive line on top of that, but Zeke ran for 1,800 yards last year because he didn't have to break 100 tackles in the first 7 games of the season.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just see it as an indictment on the offensive line, but it checks out to me because that dude fucking breaks a tackle every single run.
Oh, it's great.
Every single run.
I just wish that it was always beyond the line of scrimmage.
Oh, the last couple weeks, it has not been. No. The Pittsburgh game especially, it was just every single handoff.
He has to work so hard to even, like, get into gaining positive yards.
And that, I kind of retweeted some stats today. I don't even want to go over them because they're so dorky and so above me that I can't even comprehend it. But it pretty much says we're missing Morse and Larry, the Canadian guy, when it comes to the running game.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
I think that's the takeaway more than anything. Too.
What's that?
I think that anger would be a huge improvement, too. Like,
we don't know if anger is coming back or...
I really think that, like, I'm hoping that, let's just say, like, come at the Giants on November 19th, I would really like to see them be able to start Anger, Morrison, LDT across the interior of the offensive line.
Yeah.
And then you get to see, you know, essentially, whatever it is, like, week 10 through 17, like, the 5 that we thought we were going to be able to have all year.
Yep.
The last thing. I want to talk a little bit about Denver because, I mean, you know, we're going to be the headline game.
Well, before that, wrapping up, people are getting mad if we don't talk about the bad calls in the game.
Oh, I had 2 notes in my notes, and it was...
Yeah, bad call notes?
It had ref stuff and butt stuff.
Oh.
Because I think that...
That's like a choose your door kind of thing. Like,
the stuff. Butt stuff would be
I'm
the
definitely
back
going
door.
Butt stuff.
The back door. Mainly it was just...
Grow up!
I think that, like, Butker's great.
He is great.
He's great.
It's like, so funny because these other teams just can't figure a kicker out. And he was just sitting out there waiting to be had by anybody.
And
we were so confident in him that we just released Cairo Santos.
We have...
Out of nowhere.
Almost $2 million in dead money because they're like, eh.
We released...
Sorry, Cairo.
The most accurate kicker in team history. Over Nick Lowry and Jan Stinnerud and Pete Stojanovic... And Dave Rayner, because we like butt kicker so much.
He's great.
He's got a ferocious leg.
I am a fan of
I am a butt kicker fan. Get a butt kicker jersey.
All right, ref stuff.
Dude, you can get the personalized jersey that says butt kicker on it.
Good. Did you see the Falcons fan the other night that just embraces
we
the
led
problem,
by 25?
And it
yeah.
says, yeah, we were led by 25.
He fit in with us. Embrace your torture history.
Yeah.
So bad calls. I used to get real juiced up about this, and then I started reffing flag football, which I've done for probably, I don't know, 8 years now or something. It is a very tough job, so I sympathize with the refs. I think it was last year I was always like team ref kind of guy. So I get a lot of it. I don't blame the refs nearly as much. And I know there's conspiracies floating around, like they were making calls for the Raiders because they're moving to Vegas and they need a team to be successful and the ratings are down and the Raiders are a steadfast team. I'm not going that far at all. I do want to say that illegal contact on Eric Murray was one of the worst calls I've ever seen. We've tracked it down, I think. Seth, I think, confirmed last night that it wasn't. I thought it was so bad that they had to say the wrong number. Like, it's on somebody else on the other side of the field. Based on what Seth was saying and another few people that were watching the All-22, so you can see all the receivers, it wasn't.
But he presses him like 2 yards past the line of scrimmage.
And it's like
Cook extends his arms, and then they never come in contact after 5 yards. So there's nothing that can be even seen as an illegal behavior there. There's absolutely nothing. I can't comprehend that call.
It was so weird because they came together and then they went apart.
Clearly separated.
And no hand fighting or anything. It was literally they had this one burst of energy, and then Cook turned for the ball and Murray was kind of behind him.
Yeah, 2 yards off.
And I think that even where Murray set his feet was at 5 yards. I don't even think he was the defender was ever beyond 5 yards. And when if he was, it was by a foot or something.
I think he was
not touching the receiver.
Yeah, I think Murray was at 7 yards and Cook was at 5 yards because they were 2 yards apart from each other.
And it was bad. It was really
unfortunately
bad.
That call would suck if it's just in the game of play, but we happened to strip Derek Carr on the play and recover it. So that one was just, it was costly, and that sucks. The offensive PI, I wasn't that upset about it. I feel like Mitchell was starting to fall on his own, or maybe tripped over Cooper's feet, which is not a penalty. Mm-hmm. And then Cooper just kind of put his arms on him, kind of a hand fighting, preparing for the catch. I get it. I get what people see, because at some angles it looks like he just pushed them down, and at some angles it looks like Mitchell just trips down. But, I mean, obviously people are upset about that. I was not personally upset about that.
My frustration with the call was that, as ticky-tack as some of the defensive pass interference looks, as how incidental as some of those seem to look, and as easy as it seems to be to just, underthrow a ball in order to draw that penalty, that they have got to figure out a way to even it out. Because you can't clearly have someone putting a hand on the guy in front of them and them falling down and then say, oh, no, no reason to even discuss it, nothing to see here. Because that's happened twice now this season where you saw it against Peters and now you've seen it against Terrence Mitchell. And even if it is potentially incidental, so much of the calls that go against defensive players are oh, you've got to be kidding me. That is so light.
You're speaking my language if you're complaining about pass interference calls. But you're speaking my language.
That's just the
But they're also thing. They're calling more offensive PIs this year than they have any other year.
For sure.
So they're also on the lookout for it more. A lot of them are very questionable.
Need some work.
Need some work. I personally was not mad about that one, but I could see why everyone else. Peter's personal foul. It didn't make any sense. First off, that play was my favorite play of the football season. We're 3rd and 10. Derek Carr runs a quarterback draw for some reason. Alan Bailey just grabs him by a hand and just leisurely sitting there while carrying Derek Carr pretty much. And then there's no whistle. Carr's a runner at that point. Peters comes in and delivers the blow. Absolutely no reason for there to be a foul.
I could see the Raiders being angry.
Yeah.
But I think that
the Raiders offensive line should have been mad about it. But it was a clean hit. Stay up, Derek Carr. Go down. You're sitting there trying to fight for yards while Bailey had a grasp on him. Hit the deck. Don't keep fighting. Because if he just stops running, then his forward progress is stopped. His forward progress wasn't stopped. He's still moving for yards.
Yeah.
That's what happens. So that one was pretty bad, I thought. The Cook catch, there's been some people saying if that was ruled correctly, then the clock would have run. And he's down at the 1. I'm talking at the end of the game here.
Yeah.
And then it would have been really tough for the Raiders to get a playoff. I get that, but also in real time, I thought it was a touchdown. So.
I think they would have ended up reviewing it in either instance. If they would have called it correctly.
Yeah.
I still think that they would have stopped it.
Clock would have run for a bit.
We're still needing
it. It would have been reviewed before they got down there to spike it or do whatever. I think it looked bad because the ref on that one, starts called touchdown, then starts point down. And then goes back to a touchdown call. I've been there. And it's also, that's the worst thing you can do as a ref. Don't show any indecision. I don't care if it's the wrong call. Just make it confidently. That's what I tell every ref that I train.
All I can tell you is that I think that being isolated from like all of the things that Twitter can do, and then ultimately like the groupthink that happens a little bit. I walked away from that game definitely more upset with the Murray call and the Mitchell call than like any of the stuff that happened at the end of the game. And going back and looking at a lot of the video has kind of confirmed that for me. But like, I am regularly in game, like checking what other people are saying and kind of like what is happening.
Yeah.
And man, it has such an influence on the way that I think or the way that I feel. I wish that it didn't. I wish that I could just like survey it and then be able to form my opinion based on that. But it like always tends to sway me in one direction or the other. And like, I love Twitter, but man, like I think I need to go back to like not looking at it during games.
Yeah. It's a fun feeling.
Yeah, it was great to just like
there was
at the very least like not looking at mentions and not looking at the timeline. Like I can sit there and tweet, but I don't want to see what anyone else has to say.
That's what I've kind of geared towards during games is checking in a little bit on what other people are saying, but mostly just firing off tweets.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe looking at the mentions or whatever, but just I'm just putting thoughts out there. I don't reply if you want. I'm not really gonna do whatever.
Right.
But that's neither here nor there. And there was some backlash to Peters during that play for the personal foul. Like, how could Peters do that? What an idiot! And it was just like, what?
Oh no, I was really mad at the pass interference. But that one, I was just like, I don't think
it's totally illegal. Hit the
quarterback
play.
Like that, like
I see, I get why they called it because he's a quarterback, flag, but it's not. It wasn't an illegal play.
Yeah.
So get your Peters hate out of here.
There are a bunch of butts.
End of the game, I thought Crabtree push-off was good. Good call. Parker hold was a good call. I didn't like the Eric Murray hold on the game-winning Cordarrelle Patterson fade call, which is interesting. I didn't think he held him there. I thought they were just kind of pot committed at that point. Like, look, we've called every penalty, like any grab, we got to call at this point.
Yeah.
And then they didn't call the PI at the end, or the push-off at the end. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was a great play call, honestly, to roll away from Peters and Houston. And just run a little one-read play, pretty much. I mean, if Crabtree's covered there, there's not a whole lot else, I don't think. Because Carr's rolling to his left.
Yeah.
Not much there. I think Derek Johnson was closing in on him anyways. But that's it for the bad calls. I know that was a huge storyline.
Okay.
So, Denver.
I do want to talk about Denver. But first.
You can't beat Denver! Denver sucks ass!
Red team.
These kids can't play. In fact, these kids are terrible.
I had to do a little South Park. South Park Denver.
Before the podcast, Ryan was playing that and giggling like a 4-year-old girl for about 5 minutes.
I love it. All right,
so this is what Ryan does at night, by the way.
Yeah. So here's the deal. The reason that I wanted to talk about Denver is because I told everybody that I think Denver is playing possum. And I would explain why.
Playing opossum.
On this week's show. Spend a few minutes on Twitter. If you haven't seen these things, just get on Twitter and see like what the players in Denver are saying about what's going on right now. What's the tone in the locker room? Chris Harris says, it's really bad. Hey, Von Miller, what about the Chiefs this week? Oh, man, things are not looking great, and we're about to play the best team in the NFL. Look, I know that Denver has lost 2 straight and that they've only scored 10 points during those games. And that's, again, they lost at home to the winless Giants.
With no receivers.
And then just got, like, completely destroyed by San Diego.
Carson.
Carson. There you go. Look, I think that this Denver team, I don't care who's playing quarterback because I've seen Trevor Siemian play really well against my football team.
Yep.
Actually,
I do play who plays quarterback. Please put in Paxton Lynch or Brock Osweiler.
I mean,
it's not going to happen.
I would prefer that, but when Denver plays the Chiefs, we know how this goes. Denver will elevate their play against the Chiefs. More so than any opponent on the schedule. They circle it every time. at the beginning of this year, Monday night, against the Chiefs at Arrowhead, they want to win that game maybe more than any other on the schedule. Come to Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs. You can try to talk about maybe extra motivation with Jamaal Charles coming to Arrowhead. How is the crowd going to react? Does Denver want to win one for Jamaal?
Cheer or boo?
There are a number of things that, you know, all play into that, and I'm sure that the cheer or boo and some of those conversations will be had on Monday as people are kind of counting down toward kickoff. But I'm just going to say this, man. Like, I think that the last couple weeks, C.J. Anderson has probably been, like, just a complete disappointment for them.
Yeah.
C.J. Anderson will come to play. He is a really hard runner. He is hard to bring down. And they're going to give him every opportunity to run through this Chiefs defense. And I would not be surprised if C.J. Anderson ran for 100 yards just because they're giving him the ball over and over. Yeah. They have two great receivers.
I played him in FanDuel last week because the Chargers have a terrible run defense.
And he was awful.
Nothing.
And so, I mean, people have called this a potential get-right game for the Chiefs on both offense and defense because Denver hasn't been playing well on either side of the ball. And it would be great to see Denver lose a second game 33-0. But, you know, they say that, like, that Denver is kind of walking into having to play the Chiefs at the wrong time because we've lost these two games and we have this extra time to prepare for them. Everything might be lining up for the Chiefs in that. Denver's lost two straight as well. Like, both teams, this is going to be a fight.
It's going to be
a big time fight. And like, I think it's going to be a close game, man. I really do. And whether it's a low scoring close game or a high scoring close game like it was against Oakland, I mean, the way that the last 2 weeks have gone, where like maybe at times the game felt like it was out of reach, you started to feel comfortable or uncomfortable. Ultimately, at the end of the game, it's going to be close, and the game is going to be in the balance, and it may be just who has the ball last.
We're calling it a get-right game for the Chiefs defense. I would think in Denver they're calling it a get-right game for the Broncos offense.
Yeah.
Like, that's two bad units right now that are squaring off, and then two really good units. Has Denver's defense really played that bad?
I mean, I think that, like, Talib has been fantastic, but
Talib's, I think it was 14 catches or 14 yards allowed in the last four games.
He's really good.
God, he's over 30 now, isn't he?
I think so. Now. And the thing that's still crazy to me, I mean, this is like revisionist history to the nth degree. Aqib Talib was like a two-star recruit for Mark Mangino. It was literally like he was just kind of, it was like, oh, hey, we got this kid from Texas.
He's also been discarded by multiple NFL teams.
Yeah.
Just kicked to the side. I mean, a lot of that's his own dumbassness. Mm-hmm. Dumbassness.
Dumbassery?
Dumbassery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some of it's that. But so I think the Denver defense is still playing well. Their offense just giving them absolutely nothing. So they lose 21-0 because can't hold down the other offense for an entire game.
A lot of people would probably say if they are having trouble on defense, it's because they got rid of T.J. Ward. I'm really excited to play Denver without T.J. Ward. I'll just tell you that much.
A lot of tude. He might be back. I mean, he's about to get ostracized in Tampa Bay, it looks like.
He's a butt face. I hate him.
You don't want the Chiefs?
No. No. No.
He's thinking about it. No. He thought about it.
No, I hate him. Can't do it.
Might be what we need a little bit. Regardless, I don't think it's going to happen. I am not nervous about the Chiefs. I am still very optimistic. I think everything is in front of us. If we lose to Denver, I will be very worried. Just, it's a game. I think we should win. And I could see us losing it. It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we're in some trouble. Because this has gone beyond just two losses in 5 days, a bad five-day stretch. And it's become... What's wrong with the Chiefs?
Yeah.
I'm not there yet. I know some people are there.
The Chiefs hadn't lost.
I think it's a giant game. It's a giant game. Broncos aren't playing well. It's a game the Chiefs should win. And if they don't win, I will be concerned.
The Giants game isn't until the 19th. Oh, you mean a giant game.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
My bad.
So, no, you're fine. That was, I misinterpreted that. So, if you're still there... Donate to AHPKC because we want to go to the game.
Oh, yeah.
But But at
least plan that up.
At least one of us is really broke right now. So,
sorry, guys.
I would absolutely. I would really.
I don't know why Ryan's bringing up my financial situation.
I would really like
thanks,
to go to Arrow.
Ryan, thanks. Yes, I am having tough times. I'm having trouble feeding my children.
I would love to go to Arrowhead. I would love to be there on Monday. I even said that we can guarantee victory if we're in the building. But it's maybe...
Do you like my press pass idea where we're just banging on the windows in there?
Oof. I kind of think it would be the opposite if we went. I have...
Well, my goal would be...
Horrible, horrible experience with the Denver Broncos at Arrowhead. Have we been to a win? Have we seen the Chiefs beat the Broncos together at Arrowhead?
Did we not go last year? No, it was on Christmas last year.
Yeah. No. We haven't.
No.
We stayed home. And they won. I'm not going. Boycott Denver.
No, you gotta
boycott
go.
Monday
no,
night.
No, you gotta go and see. Or else you're gonna be saying the same thing next year.
Alright. Folks, this was fun. It was a good episode of Amateur Hour. I am Ryan Scott Hall. He is His Darkness. You are probably listening to this through Arrowhead Pride in some way, shape, or form. And this is Future and Young Thug. From their new album, Super Slimy.
Mm. Did you take part in the rapper name tweet that was going around?
No, this song is called No Cap. It's just the first track on the album. I don't know if it's any good or not.
What was it? You put young in front of the last thing that you bought. So mine was young cat vaccination. There were some fantastic answers out there.
So the last thing that I bought was Hardee's breakfast this morning.
Oh, young Hardee's breakfast.
So I kind of want to be like Young Biscuit. That'd be good. Young Sausage, Egg, and Cheese. I like Young Biscuit. I could dig that. That's going to be my next cat name.
That was a really good tweet, though. That guy got... I saw that sitting around. I saw tweets like a week after. People still quote it and give their name.
I wanted
to just update it for everything that I bought. Young six pack of Tecate Light.
what was like your favorite one that you saw?
I can't remember it now. Don't ask me to use my memory.
Don't.
Mine was my favorite. Mine.
Young cat vaccination. Okay, I can dig that.
I really enjoyed that.
Congratulations, honey. You were great.